Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast. Man, it's a night. It's late, but we got some Syria to talk about, huh?
It's late, even great.
You know, I had a couple of texts. I was at work, and I mean, we were going to do another episode, and this just kept coming up. We need to talk about this, and I think we go at it. You know, we've talked about geopolitics quite a bit, and I think Syria itself is probably one of the biggest chess pieces and one of the biggest geopolitical puzzles of today. First off, how are you?
I'm good, and I, you know, it's my big complaint here of the Syrian thing. It's just terribly inconvenient.
Yeah, it's getting in the way of other podcast episodes. How dare it?
We had ideas. I mean,
I know.
Ted Cruz and Mark Zuckerberg have to take less than first billing.
Yeah, well, you know what, we've talked about it before, and we've talked about Syria before, and I think we'll just dive into what is happening. And I think by the time we air this podcast, a lot of the airstrikes will be over. I think that's what General Mattis, I was call him General Mattis, but that's what he alluded to. He obviously alluded to the fact that this was a one-time strike, and Donald Trump alluded to something more sustained. And I think they're on the same page. Basically what they're saying is if he continues, that'd be Assad, continues to use chemical weapons on his people, that, you know what, we're going to continue to do this. So tonight it was, or this morning rather, in Syria, it was surgical airstrikes outside of Damascus on a chemical research site, and I believe a couple of the intelligence buildings, and I don't know that it was reported that there were any chemical weapon sites. I can imagine chemical weapon sites would be fairly dangerous for the overall population, but go ahead.
No, I mean, one would think indeed.
So and I'm sure they went over this in battle plans and op-ords and stuff like that, operation orders, but just kind of framing, we'll get to the long-term point here, because John McCain brought this up as well. He said, I support what the president's doing. However, there needs to be a long-term strategy in Syria. And I think all of us agree with that. There absolutely needs to be a long-term plan for any operation that you do.
I'm questioning, I mean, maybe this is second or third bullet point for you, but I'm questioning whether or not that's what the American people actually want.
So yeah,
can they even fathom a long-term strategy?
So this comes down to a fundamental question that I had a few people pose to me, and we'll get into it here, because it really creates a juxtaposition to, I think, people's idea of the buildup of Department of Defense, the buildup of the Department of State, and what sort of long-term plan you want. I mean, there's plenty of historical examples in the very recent history of long-term goals, i.e. Afghanistan, where we're still at, Iraq, where we came back to, but we'll get into that. I think I break down a little bit of the geopolitics here, and I love geopolitics. I know you do too. We talk about the interests of America and the interests of countries and why they do things. And this is a tricky one, and I think there's some things here that I will say that a lot of people won't like to hear, but is the case. So as of right now, we know that the U.S., Great Britain, and France conducted a joint coalition airstrike on targets in Syria. So we also have the other players. We have Russia, Iran, and Syria itself. So as you just kind of draw the line and move down in the brackets here, you've got the US, UK, and France, for the better part, supporting the Free Syrian Army, the Kurds and on their push to take over the country back from Assad. On the other side, you've got Russia, Iran, and Syria, like I said, with Hezbollah, who is also backed by Saudi Arabia. So you also know that America has relations with Saudi Arabia as well. And we also have a...
Relations are beautiful.
So on top of that, we also have Turkey in the mix, which shares a border with Syria. So Turkey is vehemently opposed and calls the Kurdish groups there a terrorist group. We are supporting them. We're also allies with Turkey. So that adds to the complexity as well.
We support Kurds, their proposal of Kurdistan. The Kurds are the this is a fact. The Kurds are the largest ethnic group on the planet to not have an independent state.
Yes. Yes.
Okay? And this is something that goes back, let's see here. Well, for them a lot longer, but for the United States and, Russia, this goes back 70, 80 years, 70, 80 decades. And I said this very early on in our podcast. I said it many moons ago in high school, but when we refer to Russia, this is a country, and nobody wants to acknowledge this, okay? But Russia is a nation that played just as big, if not a larger role, than the United States during the Cold War in the Middle East. Where do you think all the AK-47s over there come from?
Yeah.
The shoulder-fired rocket launchers. You think they're making them in Kabul?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
And they've refused to accept responsibility for what's going on and get involved in the global war on terror. And they wonder, they think it's just the United States paying them as a bad actor.
Yeah. So it's,
is it?
It's, I think you could have multiple answers to that question, but it just blends to the complexity that what's happening right now. I mean, there's history here. There's so much history here, and that it isn't just topical, that what's happening right now just had its genesis a year ago or 6 months ago. I mean, this is...
Since you brought that up, though, a year or so ago with the presidential election, I'd like to point out that ever since Donald John Trump got elected, that it's been his rhetoric and actions, now we can say, against the Putin regime in Russia have been on the ascendancy. As far as this talk of, all right, so the sanctions are going to stay, then we're going to take action in Syria. And now, as of today, we find out from the Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman, General John Dunford, United States Marine Corps, that we didn't even consult with the Russians, which is frankly unheard of as far as not an ally, but a non-coalition state.
Yeah.
We didn't even consult with them as to where their troops were for this whole thing. So this certainly, I'd like to point out, not by any means as a Trump partisan, but as going against the narrative of Putin and Trump being in bed together.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
this is not indicative of that.
Yeah. And, you know, getting back to not changing the subject here, but getting back to
I felt it essential to at least not highlight that, but underline that for folks that this is complex is one word for it. I'm sure we might need to invent a new one.
Yeah, I mean, it takes it really does take complexity to may be pushing the boundaries of how complex you possibly can get. I don't know if that's a good articulation or not. But
if people would believe this script in Hollywood, if you positioned what we found out in the last 24 hours in Syria, if you position this, take everything you know, whether you're from Tunisia, New Zealand, France, or the United States, and about our election, November 2016, right, wrong, or indifferent, regardless of what you think, what you know about the United States and Russia, Trump and Putin, and then fast forward to today, it'd be yet another inexplicably bizarre, unbelievable chapter in a movie that everybody's ready to end.
Yeah, and you know, you see this, we talk about Trump and Russia, and Trump and Russia and collusion. And, you know, Donald Trump came out with a speech that I believe every American can get behind, right, left, whatever, that the democratic countries, the Western countries, do need to stand behind the, or I should say, need to act on these red lines, as Emmanuel Macron said. They've crossed red line, and we decided back...
President Barack Obama said.
Yeah, and in that case, when something like this happens, and it's affecting the overall humanity in that country, then there, the action does need to be taken. But this leads to a... You know, and Trump, I should say this too, Trump did call this out. He said that you are the company that you keep. And he was pointing to Iran and Russia and said, you know, you're complicit in this by having a friendship and having interests in this country. Whereas the ambassador from Russia pushed back and said, there's consequences to this. Of course, that's the rhetoric they're going to have. I couldn't imagine a different rhetoric. But this sort of moves into the question of the long run and the end game here. And
well, the first part of that's reserved for the American people.
Yes.
What's their answer? Why is this different from Iraq and Afghanistan? We condemned action that President George W. Bush took after President Bill Clinton, patron saint that he is for the country, made his very ardent case, very strong case, on two or three occasions to the United Nations, resolutions which they approved. So I've said it before, and it's been said far better than I'm articulating, but Syria represents one of the worst human rights crises, a series of human rights crises that we haven't seen since the Holocaust in the 1930s. And yet, where is the world? And then there's the issue of, and I would pose this to the American people, as I referred to here and a little bit earlier, but do we not, I'm not going to call it hypocrisy. It's not really for me to decide, but I think it's for everybody to look in the mirror and look at themselves and answer this. Anybody listening to this or watching this and saying, okay, so this is different from Iraq and Afghanistan. Fine. In whatever way you want to say it is, this is a very bad human rights crisis, but are you prepared? I don't think so.
Yeah.
But is America prepared to put up the numbers for war again and see what you and I saw while we were at Walter Reed, 2011 to 2013, and see their sons and now daughters coming back to this country blown in half for people they'll never visit, they'll never see, they don't identify with?
Yeah. And so this is the major question that I pose. I say, okay, I agree with you, and I mean the proverbial you, that this is a humanitarian crisis. This is catastrophic for this country and for these people, and we should be on team people. We should be looking out for one another. But I also say that with the complexities of this situation, you almost, and this is what people might not like to hear, that you almost have to, in a sense, take a utilitarian viewpoint to broader humanity. So do I think there's going to be a war with Russia in the United States? I don't, although it is, there's a statistical probability there that there could be. But if this is the catalyst for that, this is the first point. If this is the catalyst to that, then are we willing for it? And this is the first question I pose, is if we're willing for that potential.
It's causing a bigger issue here for everybody else.
Now, I am not for a second discounting the fact that there's
a bigger issue here.
I'm not discounting the fact that there's horrible atrocities going on. There are, 100%. However, if you had to choose between Syria and a World War III, essentially, which one would you choose? The second is, and I am not advocating that we just sit idly by and watch millions of people suffer and die. The second thing I ask is, if your position is to overthrow dictators that are inflicting agony, pain, and death upon their population, are we setting the precedent to go in and evict these dictators? I look to...
We've spent the better part of 10, 15 years ridiculing our leaders for doing as much.
Yes. So we take...
The American people to actually want to get behind this now.
So I point to Afghanistan. I said it is 2018. It was 2001, 2003 when it really picked up there. So it's been a better part of a decade and a half that we've been there. And everyone wants out. But if we do go into Syria and have all-out war and send our, you know... active duty military members, National Guard members, reservists over to this country, Are we willing for the same thing that happened in Afghanistan, where we will indefinitely be there? If you're not on board for nation building, then you should not be on board for large-scale war or large conflicts.
There is an option, surely, a third option here, in which case you identify with and must stop making fun of him for this when the president, not once, not twice, but three times, asks his advisors, so we can't use nuclear weapons?
That one Charlie is a huge leap.
It is an option.
There it is. So, but then you're looking at, of course, widespread destruction of
civilians. No, we don't. That's not on your part, but it's a misconception in general. You know, from people that are not familiar. Not that I make nukes or anything, obviously, but the fact is there are such things as tactical nukes. Not everything is Hiroshima and Nagasaki now.
Yeah, fair enough. And I hope it never gets to that one, Charlie. But
is anybody really outside? Yeah. I don't know. Putin and his oligarchies, their respective oil boardrooms. Is anybody really interested in seeing Assad continue to inhale and exhale oxygen?
Yeah. So that's kind of the second point here, and this gets down to interests and what's happening in Russia. So Donald Trump.
Well, remember, Napoleon Bonaparte said a man will fight harder for his interests and his rights. It offended people, but I do feel the man was correct.
Yeah. So when you look at Syria currently, Donald Trump said something in his speech that I think people overlook. And he said that I want limited intervention in Syria. We do not want a long-standing presence in Syria, which means that he wants to be there, I guess if you want to call it surgically, and then we're out. What that means
for the American people, in that the American people don't realize that they identify with him by and large, but the fact is he is being the proxy of the American people and saying we want to have our cake and eat it too.
Yes. So this, because I think the vast majority of Americans do agree with him that we don't want to spend time there.
And the bloodbath, they want to save these people. They don't want to leave Aleppo like it is. Well, those two views are not homogeneous.
No, they're not. And that's why I pose this question, that what is your long-term goal? Because you can't merely walk into a place, clear it out, clear out the dictator, and then walk away. That's what happens. You get Libya. You get Afghanistan. And again, I'm not advocating that we don't do anything. And I don't think you are either.
Remember, the 30% of the country that support the president, they're also opposed to the refugees coming from that very country.
I know.
You got to decide what you actually want in order for God to answer your prayer in the affirmative.
My synapses fire a bit here, but I'm not saying that I necessarily have the best answer. So here's the other
thing. You got to ask the right question before you get the answer.
Yeah. So here's the other thing as well that I read into, and maybe I'm reading into a bit wrong here, and you can correct me if I seem off base. But when Donald Trump... When Donald Trump says, I don't want to be in Syria any longer than we need to, I think of this. I think of what are the Americans' interest in Syria. What that means is that there is not any interest for the United States in Syria. We've got ports and allied ports all over the Mediterranean. We've got them in Cyprus. We have them in Greece. We have them in Italy. We have them in Lebanon with our allies, of course.
I think that's an overtly cynical view. I don't know that we had any vested interest in ending the Holocaust, unless you think that, our future investments in Central and Eastern Europe, well, not Eastern Europe, but Central and Western Europe would matter. That's a very cynical viewpoint to take as far as all global point.
Okay. And it is a bit. However, I'll bet that with the cards on the table, that Russia has more of a vested interest in Syria than the United States does.
Of course they do. Again, where do you think all those AKs went? Yeah. So, and they don't know for damn sure where all the nuclear weapons they had in Eastern Europe went. Yeah.
And this, if you take my cynical view towards this, then it doesn't bode well for the Syrian people. And again, maybe in the... No, nothing does at all. But in the back rooms of the upper echelons of government, where bipartisanship and partisanship and whatever is just thrown out the window, That
Jesus, bipartisanship. Hey.
Yeah, excuse me. Bipartisanship would be there, but politics are thrown out the window. That you have a situation where it's like, look, we have to have a cost benefit analysis of being in this country. Yes, Syrian lives are being destroyed, but at what cost? And that's a really hard pill to swallow. And I'm not advocating for this utilitarian type viewpoint for the entire world and just get out of Syria.
It sounds like geopolitical euthanasia.
Yeah, I guess in a way. So I think when we talk about looking, observing a dictator from afar and saying we need to do something about this. Now, Syria is most definitely the most relevant and horrible example of dictatorships and atrocities. It doesn't touch Venezuela. We don't really know about North Korea, but I'm sure it's awful as well.
So what are you proposing? Do nothing?
So I'm not proposing doing nothing, because I think what's happening right now is right. And I fully support the president. I fully support Mattis. But I just...
And if the Russians stand up to us and say no more, they're going to wipe out the Kurds?
So this is where I think chess playing is limited, because I look at the complexities on the board and I say, listen, I mean, you only can move chess pieces so far. I don't think that if the airstrike killed 20 Russians or a platoon of Russians that they'd be launching nuclear weapons at Alaska. I don't think that's the case. But I think, again, just like many people, I don't know too many solutions, but I do just heed caution when people say we need to go in and just fix this, because then we're on, and maybe we need to be. Maybe we need to be back into nation building, because that's what this is going to be. But if that's not
what I'm advocating. My bottom line here, and it's not a bottom line as far as this is not a course of action, but anybody that advocates, well, hell, we need to do something, or, hey, look, this is not our deal, we need to stay out of it. It doesn't matter. Regardless, one way or the other, if we do get drawn into this in mid or long term, this invariably leads us to loggerheads with Russia.
Yes.
Okay, so anybody that answers, well, of course, if our troops get attacked, we need to respond, then you need to be prepared, ultimately speaking, which we need to be prepared for regardless because of the state of Israel, in my personal opinion, but notwithstanding, you need to be prepared to go to war with Russia at long last.
Yeah, and I think that's where
if you don't want to get tackled, then don't get on the field.
Yeah, and this is my primary concern. I mean, that's when I talk about the utilitarian approach, I'm looking for broader humanity here. I mean, we run the risk of engaging, again, in conventional warfare with a country that I don't think... So
it's... Our concern is our people.
Yeah, so the other thing too... Yes, yeah, the other thing as well, if we take the position of going in and actually waging, I would say, full-on war in Syria, and we have a economy of force, mass, all these principles of warfare, that we need to be prepared to support those institutions that are engaging in those activities. So, I mean, if that's the case and that's what American people want, or if your position is that we need to go do this, then you have to be okay with more funding to the Department of Defense. You have to be okay with more funding to the State Department. You have to be okay with more funding to the Central Intelligence Agency. You have to be okay with that, because you really, if we haven't, we have to learn, or maybe we have, that you can't, expect to do a good job with half the resources. And I realize some people make the case that they should just be able to do what they can with the strongest, richest nation in the world, but we run the risk of making this way longer than the American people want. And you know what? If we do it, it's for a good reason. But these are all my cautions and concerns moving forward. It doesn't mean that I don't want something to happen. I do. I feel.
What sort of effort, in the purest sense of the word, are the American people under the age of 40 actually willing to support?
And as of right now, it is, we need to do something.
It's fine for them, okay?
We need to do something for the Syrian people. And I agree. And doing this right now is something for the Syrian people. It is. It is destroying the capabilities of inflicting completely unnecessary harm and destruction on a population by knocking out the ability to have chemical weapons. And I do agree that we should hold Assad accountable for the use of those weapons. And if this means that we continue to hold this red line, then maybe this is a step in the right direction. But with all these complexities I just pointed out, it is not going to be as easy, even as easy if we did invade like we did Iraq back in 2001, it's still not going to be that. It will be far more difficult and far more complex than that. You can't just roll in.
Again, we have our own, we enter into the reverse Vietnamization here.
Yeah.
And that what ultimately brought down the American war effort in Vietnam was the American people, our lack of will. So it brings up the old quotation of raise no more devils than you can put down.
Yeah.
Okay. And and again, I want to get this straight. I posit this to you seriously. Do you think that the American people, by and large, we're not talking about Berkeley here, thank God, are they prepared to follow this president into war and stay the course?
Yes. And probably stay the course. Let's say he doesn't, and potential re-election, because this will go far longer than 2020. I give you that. You have to ask that question. Are you willing to go the distance? Because
if we get drawn into conflict with Russia, I mean, that's going to go one of two ways. Either A, it's going to be 3-4, God knows how many decades, or it's going to be very brief. Sand's going to be glass, and we're going to be living The Walking Dead.
Unfortunately, this is, yeah, we share concerns, my friend. And
I'm not going to be concerned if that drops. I mean, the last thing I'll feel is nothing.
I was going to say I'll retreat to the mountains, but again, you know, I do want to posit that I feel for the Syrian people. I do. I mean, you and I were
off.
Yeah. You and I absolutely saw the product and took care of the product of war in these regions. I mean, it comes back to the people ask the question. So what do we do in the Middle East? And unfortunately, until the Middle East finds peace among themselves and finds some sort of collective solution, then
what's my next question? Who are we putting in power in place of Assad? Because I'll refer people back to the novel Animal Farm.
So, I mean, so you put someone in power in place of Assad. You try to create...
So he finally gets to be president of something?
You try to create a democracy, but now you've got the Kurds. And you've got these warring factions against one another. And that's something we struggled with in Iraq and continue to struggle with in Iraq. And it's just...
Kurds claim they're a third of the state of Iraq.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting.
It's a very pro-Western group too.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, I do think, honestly, and I think you agree, that I think the Kurds are the way forward in that region. And I don't mean for peace, but at least some sort of stability there. And again,
now you're putting Turkey into this and also Lebanon.
So Turkey.
So there's your problem, folks. When you want to know what are we going to do there, well, you just brought up the Kurds, which most people aren't even thinking about tonight that aren't, well, I don't know, the Kurds. And so there's your answer. Now you just drag Turkey and Lebanon into this.
Yeah.
By and large, because of the overall scenario there, you just drag Saudi Arabia and Iran into this.
So
and
now
this little country known as Israel is hovering around the whole thing.
So yeah, you give Kurds independence, and now Turkey and the Kurds are now warring against one another.
And it really matters because Turkey's going to deny us access.
Yep.
Their air bases.
Yeah.
We've got American personnel over there. Okay. They've been a player in the global war on terror. So, I mean, this is not as simple as what we want or is what somebody else is wanting. I mean, we're not prepared to put up the numbers for war anymore.
Yeah. I think on top of that, the American people, I mean, even the war fighters themselves, as much as they're hoorah, hoorah, or you know, whatever chant you have, you know, there's a high echelon of leadership that has been through this before. And you know, I don't speak for them, but are a little war exhausted.
Of the people that are of war fighting age, the fact that if they're not criminally disqualified in this country, they're medically disqualified in this country, and there's only slightly less than 350 million people here.
Yeah. Yeah. So you put all the pieces together.
Europe has not got the military capabilities at this point outside of, you know, the French Navy and French and German nuclear programs, or the French and English nuclear programs.
Yeah.
We don't have the capabilities anymore. What do we, you know?
And on top of that, I'll just add one more thing to this.
If you're launching strikes?
If you've got resistance to Syrian refugees in Europe and in the United States, what do you do with them as well? So, you have to begin to, build up your sympathy or empathy or whatever it is and get past that in order. I mean, that's part of it. That's the humanitarian part of this.
You've seen the Cary Grant movie, The Bishop's Wife?
No, I have not.
Okay, well, long story short, Cary Grant plays the angel sent to help David Evans. He's the priest, and he's wanting this big cathedral built the whole time. But yet, the whole movie is about the struggle, why he's trying to keep his marriage together and his relationship with his daughter and be a good man and a good priest. And at the end of it, Cary Grant helps, as the angel, helps bring about this tour de force. I wouldn't call it a coup de grace, it wouldn't exactly fit the message. But the point is, at the end of this, the cathedral's not built, but the lady that the priest was trying to get all the money from, she decides to give it all to the poor, and his marriage is back together, like his family loves him. And there he is in his study, his library, and he's praying. He's going, he looks at Cary Grant, the angel, and he goes, well, what about my cathedral? And he looks at him and says, well, that's not what you pray for. He says, well, yeah, I asked for a cathedral. And he says, no, you asked for guidance. And that's where I'm coming from with this roundabout way of saying the American people must decide what it is they actually want, what it is that they want us to do here. Because this is not keeping up with the Kardashians, okay? This is not a Team Slayer battle Halo 5 on Xbox Live. No rhyme intended, but it happened. The fact is, I just don't have that kind of faith in the American people. They have the long-term support for this kind of war. That's why I've long maintained a state-on-state war. No.
Yeah.
I don't think we have what it takes to defeat Russia. So we need to think long and damn hard about that. Okay? But even if we do, all right, it doesn't matter, because the American people as a whole have to answer that. And bottom line, are they willing to follow President Trump and a said war?
Yeah. Yeah.
Devil's in the details, my friend.
Indeed. Well, you know what? We're at 30 minutes, and I know we're going to get to some questions, but concise, and we're going to leave it there. So obviously, modstate.com if you want more op and opinion pieces, and get your podcasts. Well, get this podcast anywhere you get your podcast. As always, my friend, it's been a pleasure. And until next time.
Oh, wow.
We'll see you.